welcome to Aftermarket, the podcast from Proactive Australia with its finger firmly on the investor pulse. Each month, we take a closer look at the issues shaping and shifting the markets, from cost of living to climate, geopolitics to geology, macroeconomics to medtech, and big data to battery metals. Please note that the views of our interviewees are not the views of Proactive investors. Seek independent investment advice before making any financial decisions, and remember that nothing you hear on this pod constitutes investment advice.
Okay, today on the podcast, we have James Graham, who is the CEO of Recce Pharmaceuticals, which is pioneering a new class of anti-infectives that target one of the world's biggest problems, arguably the world's biggest problems, next to decarbonisation and AI, which is the urgent global health threat posed by antibiotic-resistant superbugs and emerging viral pathogens, which we should know all about given the last 3 years that we've been through. James, welcome to the pod.
Susanna, good to be with you.
Look, tell me about the scale of antibiotic resistance. What is the problem we're facing?
Look, the problem we are facing is immense. I mean, gone are the days where you could take one antibiotic and that, that would overcome the infection. I remember those days only 5 or 10 years ago. Now, you have to take that same antibiotic plus the follow-on repeats just to get over that same antibiotic-resistant infection. So that example means basically the drugs don't work. The bacteria are mutating. They always have. They always will. It's a survival mechanism of actually. And if we haven't got effective antibiotics to keep up with that, which is the current challenge, you know, the drug resistance as we know it today will only become more challenging tomorrow. And naturally, that leads to many millions of deaths predicted for the time ahead.
So what's causing it? We've had a century of pretty good, we've had a pretty good run of antibiotics helping us with in many facets of life. Why is this happening?
Yeah. Well, I guess positively, we shouldn't blame ourselves too much. This is a natural phenomenon. And what I mean by that is it's a survival mechanism when we think of bacteria. To survive in nature, things evolve. Bacteria evolve quickly and they evolve to survive. So as bacteria have had the threat of antibiotics being put against them, they've gone, oh no, we better mutate to survive the threat of the antibiotic put before them. So what that really means is as we've identified antibiotics in nature, all existing antibiotics to date, those approved, have come from nature. They're designed with a certain mechanism, a mechanism of attack, and the bacteria are very quick to work out what that mechanism is and very quick to come up with a way to get around it. So really, that has continued through, since Adam was a boy, as they'd say, that natural evolutionary cycle, and it will always continue. What we need to do to underpin that cycle or to break that challenge of the antibiotics no longer keeping up is have an antibiotic with multiple mechanisms. So there's very smart, very adaptable bacteria can continue to mutate as they like, but whether they turn themselves inside out, they have a lipid outer layer, aka biofilm, they do whatever they want to do to try to survive, will still work and will ideally work with repeated use, meaning continue to have effective antibiotics to date. So it's not through anything, in my personal opinion, that we've done right or wrong. The simple answer is there hasn't been a new class of antibiotics in over 40 years, and the bacteria are well ahead of us in that regard with all existing drugs approved to date.
So, I mean, what are some examples of what we stand to lose? I guess, there are lots of things that we take for granted, operations where we're sort of pumped full of antibiotics sort of prophylactically or to enable us to have the lives that we do. What's on the horizon if we don't work this out?
Look, just by example of, specialists in the area, the World Health lists AMR, being antibiotic resistance, among the top 10 greatest threats to human health today. In fact, they go on to say by 2050, there'll be around 10 million deaths each year attributable to antibiotic resistance alone. They go on to even say, when the United Nations looked at this, that if we don't do something quickly, by 2030, I think is the statistic we have here, the financial impact globally could be as bad, if not worse, as the 2008-2009 economic financial crisis. So pharma economic burdens are one thing, but the human health matter of no longer being able to have a basic common surgery, aka a nose, you know, no, maybe not nose replacement, a hip replacement, or a simple natural surgical intervention that we all take for granted, as you know, you get a break in the skin, bacteria gets in, and even if they get in, the antibiotics will hopefully treat them before becoming an infection. That could be a thing of the past. And in fact, that is increasingly a thing of the past. So we no longer will be able to, you know, have the basic preventative or elective surgeries, let alone anything beyond. It would simply be a survival of the fittest, and survival of the fittest is not for the modern world as we see it.
It's not ideal. I mean, yeah, before we go on to some solutions to the problem, do you think that we have used and abused them? I know you said not to blame ourselves, but there has been a lot of talk in recent years about over-prescription of them, misuse of them, you know, that they're sort of flooded throughout the sort of, you know, agriculture and throughout our the system, basically. Do you think we've sped this up? I mean, 2030 is not a very long way away. Is there anything we could have done to slow this down?
Yeah, but look, it may be an unpopular opinion, but I think when you look at the facts, it'd be hard to say otherwise. Antibiotics did not exist, you know, 70 years ago or something like that. And if those who don't know, for a bit of humour, go Australia. The first antibiotic was penicillin from Australia. And I like to think the next new class may well be recce's, being our own. But antibiotics were not a thing before that. Bacteria were always mutating, surviving whatever they needed to mutate to survive from. We found antibiotics. We started throwing it against the bacteria. For simplicity, bacteria is the infection, obviously the one that we're referring to here. And in that case, well, you know, bacteria have always been mutating, but they're not harming or doing anything different anywhere else in the world other than making this wonderful golden bullet that we thought we had less effective. Yeah. So really, frankly, 70, 80, whatever years ago it was when we didn't have antibiotics, the world was effectively the same place. You get an infection, you die. And now that we've utilized this wonderful benefit of antibiotics, the end of it will ultimately only be you get an infection, you die. What I mean by that is it's not that we've done anything bad. We've just had something that worked so well for a period of time, and the bacteria have mutated to keep up with that. And where I think we could you know, inflict some regret is that we have not innovated effectively and frankly, I think radically enough, thinking broader than, you know, just something else found in a cave or to the bottom of the ocean, cultivated out, and it'll be different. It's not going to be different. Begin with the end in mind, design a antibiotic that you want, not reliant on what's given to you in nature, and that'll be the chance of success. And that radical innovation step, I think, has let the community down by not having drugs that are anything really different to what they first were.
Right. So what you're saying is we've exhausted a very good solution that has served us for nearly a century, and we need to pivot.
That's right. Look, I mean, you only got to look at oil and gas. Once the reserves are gone, then what? What we're doing in this case, however, as we come towards the end of those natural resource reserves, is we come up with other ways. And in this space, frankly, there wasn't any antibiotics until there was. Now that the antibiotics, because the bacteria have mutated, which they're always doing anyway, are just less and less effective. And if we don't do anything, they won't be effective at all. Well, that's, you know, we didn't have them before and we're just lucky to have them now. And unless we do something differently, we're unlikely to have much effect with them in the future anyway. So I don't think we should blame ourselves at all, other than not innovating to the degree we perhaps should have. But really be thankful for what we've had and think how we could have for the time ahead, but doing the same thing, expecting a different answer, just ain't going to work.
Yeah, Yeah, got it. I mean, and look, when we do go back to where we were, you know, and when we think about what the sort of awful lurgies that were around in the Middle Ages, we really don't want to go back there. So,
yeah, and they're still here now, except they were there then, they're still here now, only now we have antibiotics to make sure they don't kill us. And surely if we don't have effective antibiotics, it'll just be business as usual like it always was before.
Tell me what some of the solutions are, including what you're doing in this space.
Yeah, look, frankly, again, I might come to some criticism with the thought, but if you... looking to the world besides us, what people are doing is saying, we can't come up with a new antibiotic. Well, that's very unfortunate for them. Frankly, I think our company has, but we'll come to that in a moment. So instead, what they're doing is they're shepherding what they currently have, aka it's a precious resource, don't use it too much or it won't be effective and will run out. That's pretty sad. That's kind of pathetic, frankly, in the scheme of the world. What we have done in our case is we've gone... resistance will continue. The bacteria will continue to mutate. The drugs are single, multiple, if they're lucky, mechanisms aren't going to get better. They're not going to get smarter. They're not going to change. We must design as we have designed and are now the world's most clinically advanced new class of antibiotic, the most clinically advanced escape pathogen capable antibiotic. By example, that's 50% of antibiotic infections in human health. And how we did that is beginning with the end in mind. Don't do what we're currently doing expecting it to be different, but design. And that is through synthesis. So a wonderful inventor by the name of Dr. Graham Melrose, in his retirement, actually he said he's no good at his carpentry, as many do in their retirement, so he picked up his test tubes. And he looked to his history as previously was he head of research for Johnson & Johnson Australasia for about 10 years, an executive director of their board. And he said, look, you know, bacteria is mutating. I will design a polymer that is a string of beads, monomers connected together, and they will have the characteristics that are, one, attracted to the proteinaceous layer of bacteria. Two, bind to and penetrate those bacteria, regardless of their lipid outer layer, regardless of gram stain. Three, will avoid those healthy eukaryotic cells. And frankly, that has a commonality with fungal cells. So we ain't any good at fungi. That's by design, because it means we avoid the healthy human cells. And four, work and keep on working with repeated use. That means you can have an antibiotic that's good today, good tomorrow, and good beyond, because no matter how those bacteria mutate, and they will, they always have, they always will, the compound has, in our case, thousands of mechanisms of action, and it's going to take a long time, if ever, for those bacteria to work out a way around that.
It's bacteria proof, is what you're saying, this solution.
Well, I'd say it's fit for purpose. I mean, what the existing antibiotics are is a stroke of luck. You find something, it does a half good job, aka it works most of the time against the offending bacteria. Yay, that's an antibiotic. I don't think that's that smart, frankly. And really, there is no smartness to it. It's taking a molecule, multiplying it out through cultivation and thinking it's always going to be great. What has been smart in our case is designing and replicating the ideal molecule. In our case, by example, works across from the pH of the blood to the opposite pH of the stomach, so anywhere in humans, breaks down, aka as a molecule, faster than any molecule to date, and in that time period works faster than any molecule to date. So you have no ability for the body to have an inflammatory response, which many antibiotics do. Why? Because they take so long and the body sees something foreign and it attacks it. Two, it achieves its intention, binding to, interacting with that bacteria, and then not being a foreign matter in the body. And furthermore, from a method of synthesis, it's economical. It's got zero waste. We make it in about an hour. It's simple materials put together using an extremely intelligent by design method of manufacture, which of course has financial opportunities surrounding it. So I really see it's take a bit of risk, shoot for the sky, and now and then you have a chance of hitting it. And in this case, the primary compound, which is R327. The 3 is scientific journal number 3. 27 is page 27. So we didn't strike at the first shot, but we eventually got there, and our patents have surrounded that by example, work and keep on working with repeated use when other antibiotics don't, among other capabilities. So yeah, it's a sign of new hope in the fight against superbugs.
Fantastic. And you're saying it's patented. So you've got the patent in your hand.
We do. And we've actually got one of the greatest things, and compliments where compliments are due outside of patents, is things like the GAIN Act. So the GAIN Act is a gain generating, so it's an acronym, G for gain, A for eye antibiotics, I for initiatives, N for now, Generating Antibiotic Initiatives Now Act. And what that is the FDA or the US government designed a program there that says, we need new antibiotics. If you have one of this description, we'll give you what's called a qualified infectious disease status. So our lead compound focused upon sepsis, the number one condition treated in human health today, or the most expensive, I should say, has, I believe, to be the only globally awarded QIDP designation for sepsis. What that means is, whether we have patents or don't have patents, by example, we've got at least 45 granted patents, the government in the United States will give an additional 10 years of market exclusivity post-approval. So, you know, if we take however many years to potentially get that, hypothetically, in the case of that scenario, or we run out of money where we can't pay for patents, blah, 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 we don't care. We got 10 years government-backed market exclusivity above and beyond a typical patent position in any standard industry. So those initiatives are very commercially attractive and supportive going forwards. And yeah, on patents, oh gosh, we've got like 45 granted patents, 4 different families of patents, composition of matter, method of administration, curative claims, preventative claims, so on and so forth, out to at least 2041 from memory, granted. So that's very attractive.
Well, that's interesting, because I was about to, before you mentioned the GAIN Act, I was about to ask you why we weren't innovating before. I mean, it seemed, I think antibiotics, there used to be an economic reason why companies weren't innovating in that space. Could you talk me through that?
Well, firstly, and again, I'll probably come under some criticism for it, we have not, an antibiotic is not an innovation, frankly. What I mean by that, we found it in nature. There ain't nothing innovative about picking up a rock, taking a swab, cultivating it out, and, oh, man, wow, I'm so smart, I've got an antibiotic. Because that's where it started. That's what it's been. And now the best we seem to be able to innovate, looking across the board, is, hey, a bit of vancomycin with a bit of penicillin, maybe add some colostin. Oh, man, that's innovating. That's not innovating. That's taking a few existing things from nature, as we've now wrapped a name around it to call it an antibiotic, and claiming innovation. So, frankly, I don't.
I guess what I'm driving at is that there wasn't an economic imperative, because it is a sort of preventative.
Well, actually, so on the, I do know what you, if I believe correctly, to what you're trying to say there. The economics of it, so say it this way, the technology, the newest class of antibiotic is 40 years old. Now, 40 years ago, a car would have been worth so many dollars, because it would drive like that and do like that and have all these performance characteristics. Now, that 40-year-old car, hypothetically, you expect me to pay the same price for this 40-year-old out-of-date technology? No way. The thing doesn't work. And what I mean by that is, the economics of expecting a crappy technology to have a premium price when the thing doesn't really work anyway, doesn't make sense. The world doesn't work that way, and hence there's not pricing associated with it. However, and first and foremost, our company, and it's not about, this is just from a strategic perspective, we only do one, unmet medical needs, meaning not serviced by any existing antibiotics, and two, those of large patient populations. We start there. Because, of course, when you go outside of that, so many generics, so many other things. Yeah, frankly, I think we can compete in all of those based upon our economical method of manufacture. But go for an area that has meaning for human health, has meaning for the pharma economic burden, and expect to charge a price for it.
That makes sense. So tell me what the future is for Recce now that you've got your you've got funding, you've got patents, you've got an elegant and simple solution. What's next?
Look, it's so just for very brief background, I started with Recce as the founding investor. If it's not obvious, I like business. I'm a business guy. But I work with, and one of my greatest privileges is good people, but great science and great scientists and clinicians. So we started identifying a compound and hoping it'd do what it said on the jar, so to speak. And as time has evolved, we've worked out it is safe. It is well tolerated. It doesn't succumb to antibiotic resistance and blah, blah, blah. Now we have multiple clinical studies in phase 1 or phase 2 where I can actually see people that were that day turning up for an amputation or have been suffering tremendously for so many years because of their antibiotic resistant infection and see it with my own eyes, the impact that we are having to that person, those people, and I say those people or including the clinicians, that there is a sign of new hope in the fight against superbugs. And briefly, across the areas we focus upon, we have the most clinically advanced sepsis drug candidates, sepsis being blood poisoning. We've dosed 80 intravascularly, 80 healthy volunteers. It's safe. It's well tolerated. Separate to that, topically, burn wound infections. Oh my gosh, it's a big unmet medical need there. We've dosed many people in that area. You look at their wound, not only is it extremely sensitive, it's quite gross. Like they can have so many different types of bacterial infections. You just go, oh, how could the world be so cruel to this person? But they reverse. The infections go from that's surely not a foot because it doesn't look like a foot to, hey, it turns out to be a foot. There's sensitivity again and look, blood's pumping through it. Wow. So you get these kind of, and I say it in a slightly crass but human way where not only can I see it for my own eyes, it's not a dish, this person's actually a person, they can tell me how they're feeling, to what could this mean across the many unmet medical needs and the challenge of antibiotic resistance as a whole. So across our programs, wonderful, starting to really see it day in, day out, and it's exciting. But what that could mean for the future, oh, I'm looking forward to finding out.
That's fantastic, James. Look, I really appreciate you being on the pod. It's always good to chat to you. Look, thanks for coming on and telling us all about this this very exciting solution to what is one of the big problems we face in the world today.
Yeah, it's my pleasure to share with you, Sue. And I certainly look forward to telling a few other tales, aka the ones I'm not allowed to tell at the moment, but I do know and I look forward to telling it in the future because there I think there is a sign of hope in the fight against superbugs, and heck, who knows, we need it.
Great. Thanks a lot, James.
Many thanks.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of Aftermarket. You can find more great investor-focused content at www.proactiveinvestors.com.au. Once again, don't take anything you hear on Aftermarket as investment advice. Do your own research. We'll be back again next month with more market chat. Bye for now.